Hello everyone, thanks for being here. I hope this video finds you healthy and well. We are continuing with the question and answer format that Nichiren uses when he's teaching doctrine. This is the doctrine of attaining Buddhahood in one's present form. And in part one, we left off as Nichiren was once again reviewing the history of Japan, the last 400 years of Japan, and how it was possible for a great teacher, Dengyo, or Saicho, Dengyo posthumously called Dengyo, to elucidate and correct once again Shakyamuni's obvious pattern of teaching and his ultimate teaching of the Lotus Sutra, just as Chiche in China back in the late 500s and early 600s had done so, to show that the Lotus Sutra is the culminating teaching. So Dengyo, through his scholarship and his travels back and forth from China to Japan, straightened out all of the scholarship in Japan, was proclaimed by the leadership, the elite of Japan, to be the great teacher. And the Japanese people followed, again, an authoritarian state, but they followed correctly the way to practice Buddhism, and Dengyo was elevated as a great scholar. And unfortunately, once Dengyo passed away, you know, people will people. So the desire for power and control, even his own students reinterpreted things, cast away some of Dengyo's teachings, all in order to seek their spotlight and their superiority. And so again, politics rears its ugly head and things go into decline. And one of the people that he attacks is Chikaku, amongst others. Chikaku had been a student of Dengyo's, but then once Dengyo passed away, he, you know, had his own agenda. So because of that, this next question, which again is Nichiren posing it, but he has his ear to the ground. He knows what people are either saying or going to say. This question: the great teacher Chikaku knew the great teacher Dengyo personally, studied directly under him, and inherited his teachings. You, on the other hand, are separated from Dengyo by more than 400 years. Is this not so? All right, you can see a sort of a point being made here, an indictment of Nichiren, right? As, what do you know? Chikaku was there, right? So Nichiren answers this posited question: are those who have received the teachings directly from their teacher invariably free from error, while those who appear in later ages and examine and clarify these teachings are to be regarded as worthless? Is this what you're saying? If so, then should we throw away the sutras and instead rely upon the four ranks of bodhisattvas? Going back, in other words, to Hinayana, early teachings. Should a person throw away the deed of transfer received from his father and mother and instead depend upon oral transmission? Right? Well, your dad didn't tell me you own that, right? The paperwork doesn't matter, right? Are the written commentaries of the great teacher Dengyo so much trash, and the oral traditions handed down from the great teacher Chikaku the only guide to the truth? In other words, you can say whatever you want once someone has passed away. Do we disregard everything that that person wrote, their commentaries, their opinions? Do we just say that's worthless because the new guy is all shiny and new? Everything he says must be true. In Outstanding Principles, the great teacher Dengyo lists 10 points that are not found in any sutra other than the Lotus. As the eighth of these, it names the sutra's, quote, superiority in leading people to attain Buddhahood in their present form, end quote. Later on, the commentary states, quote, you should understand that this passage is inquiring whether there are any persons who have attained Buddhahood and so intends to manifest the great power and authority of this sutra. So on, you should understand that among the sutras that the other schools rely upon, there are none that teach the doctrine of entering Buddhahood in one's present form, end quote. Right? They're all about some other lands, other lifetimes, so on and so forth. Those are erroneous views. Those are misunderstood, expedient teachings. Are we to turn our backs on these passages of commentary and accept the attainment of Buddhahood in one's present form that the great teacher Chikaku says derives from the esoteric doctrines and practices of the Mahavacharana Sutra? Again, using mudras and mantras. Question. Among the commentaries of the great teacher Dengyo, are there any that do not accept the word only in mind aspiring for the Enlightenment's statement that only in the true word teachings can one attain Buddhahood in one's present form? That's an oddly worded question. But it's a strange reversal, right? The question wants to say, okay, so Dengyo said that, but did he ever say, then quoting Chikaku, that the only word wasn't used in the true word teachings? So the answer, Outstanding Principle states, quote, neither teacher nor disciples need undergo countless kalpas of austere practice in order to attain Buddhahood. Through the power of the Lotus Sutra of the Wonderful Law, Myoho Renge Kyo, they can do so in their present form, end quote. Thus, as you can see, this commentary does not accept the word only in mind aspiring for enlightenment's statement. So mind aspiring for enlightenment is a commentary of Chikaku's where he invents this word saying only because he wants to take away from the Lotus Sutra and relegate it to some inferior teaching, not because of scholarship, but seriously, he's only doing this, Chikaku is, to bolster his own supremacy. I found that this is the way, not that one, not what Dengyo says. And Dengyo, of course, passed away, can't speak up or against him. Question. If one rejects mind aspiring for enlightenment, is not one then rejecting Nagarjuna? Answer. It is more likely that the translator distorted the meaning according to his personal views. Boom, there it is. Reaches back to Nagarjuna to supersede Dengyo, because Nagarjuna is back around the turn of the millennium, right? And reinterprets and manipulates the teachings of Nagarjuna to assume a superior place. It's all politics. It's all let's play with the words. Question. If you reject any translator, then should you not also reject Kumarajiva, the translator of the Lotus Sutra? Well, Nichiren isn't rejecting translators. He's saying this particular translator, Chikaku, is manipulating the words to his own agenda. I mean, that's very clear, right? But the question, of course, ignores that clarity and says, oh, well, translators, well, what about Kumarajiva? Answer. In the case of Kumarajiva, There is actual proof attesting to the validity of his translations, but no such proof exists in the case of Pu Kung. Question: may I ask what proof you refer to? All right, I refer to the fact that Kumarajiva's tongue remained unburned. That's a part of the stories of his debating in Kumarajiva's day with other schools in the north of China, right? You should inquire about the details. So I think that's an unfortunate point because there's still a lot of understanding that's assumed there of that story and what it's emblematic of. Just as a way to clarify, I'll add my own interpretation. This was a story of Kumarajiva's debate with these other schools regarding the validity of the Lotus Sutra and his expert translation into Chinese from several extant versions from India. And it was, you know, the story is once he dies and he's burned in, you know, in cremation, if he spoke a word of lies, then he will die, he'll burn completely. But if his, again, the tongue is very, it's used a lot in ancient Asia, isn't it? May still be today, that the Buddha's tongue's reaching out to the Brahma heaven for proof of truth. It's all about the tongue and verbal teaching, right? So this story revolves around Kumarajiva's cremation and the fact that his tongue was held as a relic after his death because it did not burn, indicating therefore that he never said a word of untruths. But this really refers to his excellence in debate and how he won every debate he ever participated in, which he could only do if the facts were on his side, right? So it's a colorful way of indicating that. Question: were Jikaku and Chisho ignorant of this matter? Well, whether they were ignorant or not isn't the issue. It's whether or not they chose to promote it or bury it, right? Answer: these two men put their trust in the doctrines of the Tripitaka masters, such as Shan Wu Wei. This is probably the reason they rejected the correct teachings of the great teacher Dengyo. They are examples of men who relied upon persons and turned their backs upon the law. Expert turn of words there. Nichiren is quoting Shakyamuni himself, right? Rely upon the law, not upon the persons. Whereas these people were relying on an imposed scholarship of the past and using that scholarship in their present day, interpreting it in a way to indicate that they were superior as people rather than the superiority of the teachings, Shakyamuni's teachings, which everywhere in history, when there's a scholar who does that, Buddhism rises again to the proper order and the Lotus Sutra as the ultimate teaching. But there's constantly these political moves to, and it's really easy. If you know the pinnacle of something, there's only one pinnacle, right? There's only one ultimate of anything, right? A really simplistic analogy would be, look, there's different grades of gasoline when you go to the pump, right? There's regular, there's medium grade, and then there's the top grade, whether they call it extreme or premium or whatever the label is. That's the highest octane, the cleanest, the best gasoline, right? So if you want people to think that your gasoline is superior, but it isn't, then the first thing you attack is premium. And so you go on a rant about how premium is a great, it's fake, it's a great marketing scheme, and it's really full of additives and all these other things to make more money, and it's really worse fuel. But you know, everybody says get premium is better for your engine, but they just get more money for it. It's really not any different than regular, and our regular is 10 times better than their premium, because the regular is regular because that's the best functioning gasoline for your engine. Premium is a hoax. They're getting more money for nothing. So buy our regular. It's actually better. Right? This is sales. It's incredibly dumbfounding. But if you look around today at the way politics are today and the way marketing is today, that's pretty much the formula, right? It's nothing new. It's been around. We see it here in Buddhism. Right? Oh, don't pay attention to him. He thinks he's so great. That's just, you know, for certain people. For general people, this is much better. This will get you to, you know, your enlightenment. Much better. That stuff. Don't pay attention to it. It's childish. Right? It's as old as the hills. It's a crock. But so many people are willing to listen to it that these charlatans rise to power and hold power for hundreds of years because everyone just goes along to get along, right? Question. Up until now, there has never been anyone in Japan who disputed the teachings of Chikaku, Chisho, and Annan. How do you explain that? Who are you to come along and straighten things out? Obviously, because this is all written by Nichiren, he's making very obvious the sickness, if you will, of traditions, of listening without hearing, or hearing without listening, however you want to use that metaphor. Not really looking into the superficial. And this is why study in Buddhism is so critical. Because opinions are like air, they're everywhere. And you know, all of us have our own path, as we've discussed, to Buddha, our own path to figure ourselves out, our own minds, so that we can break through to our Buddha mind. That's a very individual task. But if we falter and we just listen to others and go, okay, I'll accept that and I'll just do that, we can get fooled very easily. Even if it's well-meaning, because my path to Buddhahood is not your path to Buddhahood, right? I can, through Sangha, through our equatable mission, for our paths, share a great deal with you that help clarify things for my path, which may also help you. That's the bodhisattva effort that you and I make, right, in discussing Buddhism. But our goal is always Buddhahood, not being smarter than you or being more Buddha potential than you. I mean, that's silliness. That's grade school kind of argumentation. Our goal is Buddhahood, and for each one of us to break through to that Buddha mind. We want to help each other. So the more we describe our own struggles and our own methods for understanding things, the more potential we have of sharing and enlightening one another, ourselves primarily, but by sharing that, also touching on things that will cause your own insights, right? Which are going to be different than mine, but by sharing, we can see more clearly. And study of the law, of the way Buddhahood instantiates, of the way it occurs in life, in our minds, the way we experience it. That's what study is about. Not about who can convince each other of which study is better, right? There's only one study, how to attain enlightenment. And again, as Shakyamuni pointed out, You're only going to be certain of this, you'll remove all doubt, if you study broadly, because it's all there. You'll find your particular way, your insight. And the more we share that kind of study, the more quickly we'll all resolve our Buddhahood. Answer: do the followers of the great teacher Kobo accept the teachings of Jikaku and Chisho? Do the followers of Jikaku and Chisho accept the teachings of the great teacher Kobo? Question: although the two teaching lines may differ somewhat, they are not as your teachings would be, as incompatible as fire and water. And neither do they criticize others as slanderers of the correct teachings, do they? Okay. Answer: but how exactly should we describe slander of the correct teaching? When the followers of non-Buddhist religions attack the Buddhist teachings, when followers of Hinayana attack Mahayana, when followers of provisional Mahayana look down on the teachings of the true Mahayana, or when true Mahayana attempts to join forces with provisional Mahayana, when in the final analysis what is superior is designated inferior, such acts go against the law and are therefore termed slander of the law. Now, you understand by now, if you're new, law doesn't mean a governmental edict. Law is used as a word describing the fundamental cosmic forces of life. In Buddhism, the forces of life are preeminent. Cosmic forces are really a precipitation of life force. The only reason there are forces at all is because of the energy that of potential that makes for life to exist. Life to exist is a emergent property of quiescent energy, potential energy. See, in the mind of Buddha, this becomes so obvious that our human samsaric mind of distinctions and labeling and identifying anything shuts up. It just doesn't play. It doesn't belong. That samsaric world of identification and labeling is the very act that causes our sufferings in samsara as human beings. So enlightenment is an eschewing of that at its fundamental construction. When that happens, everything can be perceived and understood, experienced as amazing. That we exist is amazing. Hard stop. If you're experiencing that, then the only other experience you could have samsarically with that mind is deep appreciation, what one might call love. Certainly, profound desire to bring everyone into that mindset with you, ergo compassion. Right? It's not an empathetic response. It's a, oh my, come here. Drop what you're doing, drop what you're thinking, come here, you need to be here. Thus the language of location, Eagle Peak, land of pure light, tranquil light, all of those are metaphors and similes and words trying to get you to understand. From this place of experience, everything is so amazing. I used an analogy recently about, you know, flying, you know, when you have dreams of flying, how you purvey everything when you're chanting with your Nichiren's mandala and you're trying to embody and awaken that Buddha mind. Don't get stuck on the idea of your vision and what you're seeing at different distances and what you're purveying. That may be an entry, a path of entry that I have used in the past to try to get my mind, my monkey mind, to shut up and start to lead me toward my Buddha. But Buddha-ness isn't the survey. It's another way of being entirely. It's another mind, a law of truth, of perception, that clicks on like a light in the dark. Again, I'm trying to use words to describe something that's so undescribable, that must be experienced. And that kind of language is what ultimately awakens my experience of Buddha. When I demand from my chanting and my mandala to awaken my Gohonzon, my Buddha mind, without precept, without trying to label it or make it some kind of vision or contain some kind of location, just what is it? I want it, I want to feel it, I want to know it. That's when the trigger happens. It just so happens that sometimes I'll meander around and use, you know, dreamlike visions to try to unglue my mind from daily preoccupations to go toward it. But that's not it. That's not the experience, because that's still attached. I want to detach completely. Namo myo renge kyo. That's when it occurs. Where is there any scriptural evidence to support the great teacher Kobo's contention that the Mahavarachana Sutra is superior to the Lotus and the Flower Garland Sutras? The Lotus Sutra, on the other hand, contains passages clearly stating that it surpasses the Flower Garland and Mahavarachana Sutra, right? Shakyamuni's own words. This is the meaning, for example, of the statement that among all sutras the Buddha has preached, now preaches, or will preach, the Lotus Sutra is supreme. Period. Why are you arguing with this? These are Shakyamuni's words. Are you smarter than Shakyamuni? It's his teaching. Though Kobo is highly honored, he can hardly escape the grave charge of contradicting Shakyamuni. There it is. Many treasures and the emanation Buddhas of the Ten Directions. The emanation Buddhas of the Ten Directions. I keep hammering on this. Emanations are imaginary constructs for teaching. Mahavarachana ain't a guy. He's the impersonation, the personification of a path of what Buddhahood can feel like, be like, the mental construct that is required, like I was just talking about, being that disembodied self. Now, don't get mixed up here with the out-of-body experiences and all that, astral planes and stuff. That's not what I'm talking about. Buddhism is about this body, this mind, and the mind, not this brain, but the mind that is emanating or emergent from our existence as human beings. I'll say it again, Buddhahood is something we can only experience in this form. Outside of this form of human being, there is no Buddha. Because Buddha is a perceptive reality, a perceptive truth of seeing the amazing process that is this energy, this karma, this momentum, this life. so it can't be elsewhere. Now, rather than appealing to the authorities in an attempt to browbeat me, why do you not simply produce some reliable passages of scriptural proof? Because they're not there. You people look to a human being to be your allies, but I, Nichiren, make the deities of the sun and moon, chakra and Brahma, my allies. In other words, I don't rely on people. People are fallible. People are searching. People are people. I rely on the teachings of Shakyamuni. I rely on Buddhahood. I rely on that clarity, which everything else is derived from, including people. Deities of the sun and moon, open your heavenly eyes and look at what is happening. In the places of the sun and moon, surely there are copies of the lotus, Mahavarachana, and flower garland sutras. Compare them and see whose teaching derives the higher place, those of Kobo, Jikaku, Chisho, and Anan, or those of Nichiren. So this is there may be some translatory errors here, but the teaching that Nichiren is offering is really a Bodhisattva's guidance, assistance to Shakyamuni himself, because Nichiren isn't teaching a different form of Buddhism. What Nichiren is doing is clarifying Shakyamuni's Buddhism and demanding that those who would be teachers of Buddhism fall in line with the actual teaching, instead of using it as a device to govern people and gain favor, political propaganda, so on and so forth. All you need do is follow the original teaching, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. You would achieve everything you want to achieve in life, but instead of your greed, your avarice, you wanting money, fame, popularity, those are lower motives. Those are not Buddhism. And by claiming their Buddhism, you're creating a great error. This is what Nichiren is about. If in the doctrines I put forth, there is even one part in 100 or 1,000 that accords with the truth, then how can you withhold your aid from me? Not me, Nichiren, again, but Nichiren as votary of the Lotus Sutra. And if the teachings of Kobo and the others are in fact false, then all the people in Japan will suffer the retribution of being born without eyes. Will you not then regard them with great pity? They've been fooled. They've been fooled by snake oil salesmen who say they teach Buddhism, but do not. I, Nichiren, have twice been banished, and at one point was almost beheaded, right? Those responsible were, in effect, attempting to cut off the heads of Shakyamuni, many treasures, and the Buddhas of the Ten Directions. In other words, to silence the correct teaching. There is only one deity of the sun and one deity of the moon, but you are the eyes and life of all the living beings of the four continents. It is written in the sutras that you deities of the sun and moon feed upon the law of the Buddha and thereby increase your brilliance and power. This alludes to what I was saying earlier. There's only one source of potential. Potential is limitless. Everything else precipitates from that energy. You can claim it to be otherwise, but even that claim is precipitant from the same thing. So you're fooling yourself, right? Persons who destroy the flavor of the Buddhist law are in effect depriving you deities of your strength. Now he's talking abstractly about the forces, the cosmic forces, if you will, of that support, instantiation, manifestation of life as that potential. Getting a dry mouth. I hope this makes sense to you. They are enemies of all living beings. How can you, deities of the sun and moon, go on shining upon the heads of such persons, giving them long life and sustaining them with clothing and food, when the disciples of those three great teachers, Kobo, Jikaku, and Chisho, slander the Lotus Sutra? Is it simply because the minds of you deities of the sun and moon have taken possession of them and are causing them to commit slander? Not likely, right? So he's questioning the cosmos as he speaks. Right? When we wake up every morning to the sun, it's still the same sun. This is not like on Thursdays there's 1.5 suns. It just doesn't happen, right? The potential for it to happen is there, but what an event that would be. We would probably cease to exist. There's a very delicate balance for us to be alive in this form, isn't there? Or, if that is not the case, and I myself am at fault, then you, the deity of the sun, must show me so. So this is like when I talk about sitting in front of your mandala, Nichiren's mandala of Gohonzon, and demanding your Buddhahood, demanding your Buddha mind. This is what Nichiren is doing. He's looking up at the heavens. And he's saying to the universe, to the sun and moon, things that are tangible and real. If I'm wrong, show me, damn it. Don't fool around. I want the truth. I want to know it now. That kind of will, that kind of ichinen for the truth. Not what somebody says is the truth. Not what some scholar says is the truth. I want to know the fact of the matter. I want to experience it now. Let those disciples be summoned to debate with me. And if I am bested in the argument and yet refuse to change my views, then you deities may take away my life. I'm so confident in my scholarship and study of Shakyamuni's words, not anybody else. And when I see another teacher mirroring those same exact teachings, and I gain greater confidence in Shakyamuni's words through my study of Dengyo, through my study of Tendai Chiche, through my study of Nagarjuna, through my study of these scholars, Miao Lo, on and on, I get greater insight of exactly, when I go back and read Shakyamuni's exact words, what those mean, what they imply, what they actually indicate, and how I should practice my enlightenment, my Buddhism. I say mine because we each have our own path, not because we have a different Buddhism. There's only one, right? Just don't misunderstand, please. So send them to me, people that would argue with me. And if my arguments fail, I will recognize that I am wrong. I will accept my demise, my I will accept the loss of my own life. That's how convinced I am. But that is not what happens. Instead, you unreasonably hand me over to my enemies like a baby monkey entrusted to a dog or a baby mouse presented to a cat to be attacked and tortured without mercy and yet met out no punishment to my tormentors. That is what I cannot countenance. So this is a moment of quite a deep reflection, maybe. This is Nichiren going, God damn it, my life is beset on all sides by people who want to destroy me. Why this? Of course he knows, he's already answered this many times, because he's a votary of the Lotus Sutra in this latter defiled age. But he's exploring this argument out loud in this doctrine again so that people understand the way enlightenment works. To be enlightened is to be challenged, to challenge one's own attachments, right? We call it karma. To modify our momentum toward our enlightened mind. It's not always easy. And when it is easy, we don't appreciate it because we expect it. As far as your deities of the sun and moon are concerned, I suppose I am a deadly foe. When I find myself in the presence of Shakyamuni Buddha, the Lord of Teachings, I will surely press charges against you. At that time, you deities must bear me no resentment. What an interesting argument, right? When it feels like the whole world is against you, still the conviction that Buddhahood is attainable in this form, when your relationship with Shakyamuni, that same Buddhahood available to you, then you'll be able to look upon all of this struggle, whatever it is that you're going through, pain, suffering. You won't wish it harm. In the end, he says, at that time, you must bear me no resentment. He's still concerned about his enemies. When I show you my Buddhahood, don't feel bad. Don't resent me. Right? Not I'll get my revenge. None of that. You deities of the sun and moon, as well as you deities of the earth and sea, hear my words. And you deities who protect and guard Japan, hear me. Right? This is a compassionate plea now for the psychic, the mental energy of his country. I have not the slightest ill intention. Obviously. Therefore, you must hasten to respond in an appropriate manner. And if you delay until it is too late, you must bear me no grudge. Namu myoho renge kyo. Namu myoho renge kyo. With my deep respect, Nichiren, reply to Myoichiyo Nyo. Wow, what a fascinating letter. This, the way that I did not expect it to end that way. This is a letter to a woman, a relative of one of Nichiren's disciples. There's a lot of doctrinal teaching, using his own life as an example, but a lot of history of Japan, how these traditions has overtaken the actual teachings of Shakyamuni. And in the end, it almost seems like he forgets that he's writing a letter to this woman and makes his own impassioned plea for his enlightenment, his Buddhahood. That's amazing. Nichiren is always showing us as a template how to practice this Buddhism. But in this letter, he seems to have almost cast aside an audience and really internalized his own his volition, his will to fuse with Buddha. So hard to describe this. I get questions all the time. What should I be thinking? How should I chant? There it is. With every conceivable idea in your mind, you need to completely obliterate your visual contextualizing of what Buddhahood looks like, feels like. That's your attachments. That's what's holding you back. With my life itself, with every atom in my body, I submit to this a clarity that I do not have. I know I do not have it because I'm beset by all of these ideas, thoughts, images. Just blind me with truth. Awaken this Buddha that I know is there in my mind. Let me perceive it, through it, be it, in it. This complete clarity that my life can be a tool for clarity. Stop looking at what you're seeing and start looking at what you're not seeing. Namo myoho renge kyo. That's a wonderful conundrum to end on when you're chanting to Nichiren's mandala for the enlightenment of your Gohonzon and your Buddha. Demand to see what you do not see. I'm proud of your practice. I'm privileged to have you as participants in this Sangha. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Take care of your health. Be kind to one another. Namo myoho renge kyo. I'll see you soon. Hey, thank you for being here. Did you know there's a third way you can help support this channel? And it won't cost you a cent. Yep. If you are not able to be a patron on Patreon or use the PayPal me at .com at Sifu Sylvain because you don't have the financial fortune to help support this channel right now, you, as I say, always support this channel by watching. But you can also help us grow so that maybe one day we can get over 10,000 subscribers and YouTube will grace us with monetization. It's not a lot. But if you can make sure you're subscribed and share a video like a simple one, just go into the search criteria and type monk and you'll have a video that'll come up that's been up for years about what is a monk. You know, it's called monk, who, how, where, something like that. That might be a great introduction to somebody who doesn't understand what a monk is to begin with. It's a tool. Use this channel as a tool to help you with your bodhisattva practice and share a video to somebody who you think, oh, I know somebody who'll benefit from watching this. And in that way, you can help us grow. And that's a really good way to help your practice along as well. So just wanted to drop that in on you in case that's something that you might find useful. Take care of yourself again, and I'll see you soon. Bye.